Welcome, everyone. My name is Jules Urbeck. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Otoy. How many in this room are familiar with what we do or our company? Just a few. All right. So, good news is this is a primer on what we're about as a company and also what we're trying to achieve just for the ecosystem of media, rendering, computer graphics, and the like. And there is a big part of what we're doing now that is related to blockchain and IP rights. So I think that'll be relevant for what we want to see done through MESA. So as we look towards the 2020s, and we're nearly there, it's crazy. We've been, I started Otoy about 15 years ago, so I've seen just a lot of things change. There's several trends that that we're tracking. One of them is that photorealism in computer graphics is almost, at this point, commoditized, and games and even visual effects are becoming so inexpensive that they're just gonna become like video. They'll be essentially free, and it won't be expensive or complicated to get to perfect CGI and photorealism. And there's a lot of factors that are contributing to that. AI, GPU rendering, which we're a big part of. The other thing is that media itself will probably be real-time. In other words, you have game engines like Unity or Unreal that typically started in the video game space that are now, they have pretty serious aspirations for being cinematic tools. And in fact, some of the quality that you're seeing out of these game engines is approaching the same level of visual effects. And to that end, we've actually integrated our visual effects pipeline in both those engines. And then the other component with interactive media is that we think it'll be very intuitive. A lot of complexity, even with user interfaces, and even in games, I think is going away. You'll see a lot of sandbox type of games or things that are easy to sort of modularly connect together. And that's especially true of things like augmented reality and VR, where the old app model or even the web page model doesn't really work. You have scene graphs of space that are combined together in ways that weren't really contemplated in the siloed app or media stream model. And our goal is there is still increasing complexity that we may be solving now for current screens and 2K and 4K and the like, but as we get towards things like VR and even holographic displays, which are real and they're coming, the complexity and cost of rendering goes up. And along the way, we want to make the reality of inexpensive and democratized content creation tools and publishing available to everyone. We think that that's the healthiest way for the industry to grow. And so we've actually built a company that's been focused on these different areas that are currently pain points, but hopefully won't be in the future. You'll see here on this slide, we're showing some of our capture technology that's been used for creating digital doubles. And you may have seen our work, our GPU renderer, is used in tons of visual effects, TV and film work. These are all rendered on a GPU. We don't have a CPU renderer. And for those that aren't familiar with what a GPU is, that's basically the same chips that powered video games in the Xbox and PlayStation. Today our phones have that, but this quality was not something that people thought was possible to do on a graphics card 10 years ago. And all of these renders are done on just a few off-the-shelf GPUs at about 40 times the speed of CPU rendering. And this is the future of content creation. And we've very proudly sort of seen the adoption of GPU rendering sort of go all the way to film and movies. And we've been working on Octane, which is our GPU renderer, for about 10 years. We started off trying to replace CGI on, for stills and then animations. And around 2016, we started to see real adoption, like what you had seen before, for cinematic TV. And our next goal is really to tackle, to bring Octane and that quality that you're seeing in these TV shows and films to real-time games, and also use that as a launching pad towards holographic media. And just this year, the opening of a title sequence for Ant-Man and the Wasp was rendered in Octane on GPUs on the public cloud, which is pretty awesome. So that's something that we had never experienced prior to this year, but it does show the GPU rendering and the cloud and studios like Disney and Marvel are very open to this to this working. And what's interesting is that we do have a capacity problem. The public cloud, I was just talking to our friends from Google last night, we work with Amazon, there aren't enough GPUs to satisfy the number of users that could leverage this kind of service if it were inexpensive enough. So that's one of the reasons why we've been looking towards the blockchain. The other important consideration for us is to take the same render that we've used to render this Marvel movie and put that in to game engines like Unity. So we did a deal with Unity in 2016, and Octane, our GPU renderer, is actually fully integrated as of last year for all Unity users. And we also announced 2 years ago a deal with Facebook to bring holographic capture, light field capture, to their video pipeline. And I'll be diving into all of these pieces in this presentation, and you'll see sort of how they all come together. But roughly speaking, the company and the services that we build are broken down into these three tranches. And one is capture, the other is rendering, and lastly, the streaming and publishing are in the third tier. On the capture side, at the very high end, we have a service called LightStage. It's been used to create digital doubles. For example, if you saw Rogue One, Princess Leia, Tarkin, these are based off of LightStage stands. And ILM and Weta and others typically use that for creating perfect digital doubles. Smithsonian, we stand in President Obama with our first portable LightStage. And while LightStage started off about 10 years ago as a very high-end, essentially a cage that was immovable, we've created portable versions. And we're working more and more towards being able to bring this technology to cell phones and even HMDs. The quality of LightStage is just amazing, though. It does give you not just the surface details, but everything you would need to relight the subject that you're capturing. And this is basically a CG render of a woman's head, and you can see it's perfectly lit by the light probe. And this is something that doesn't require any artistry. You just take the data from LightStage and you can render it at this quality. And that was a while ago. So now we've been improving LightStage to the point where it can capture just incredible details. And also on cheaper and cheaper hardware. And this is something that we tested on a $10,000 rig versus a few $100,000 LightStage. We created a plugin for Unity and Unreal that brings in LightStage data and renders it. And you can see here, this asset can be relit perfectly. And this is something that can be extended as we bring this to cell phones with two or three camera lenses to capturing perfect detail for environments, objects, even surface properties like metal, and ultimately being able to create, with the help of AI tools, an entire scene. So this was done by an artist using our tools for a contest that Oculus launched. And this was a real garden in Japan, and it was done with photogrammetry and our renderer. And so making this something that can be automated is going to really help explode the way that users can create content in meaningful ways. So a lot of that was work that we had sort of offered at the very high end. And as we were looking to make this technology available to consumers, we found a very willing and great partner in Facebook. And a couple of years back, we announced with Facebook that we're working on this video pipeline. And at SIGGRAPH, we've been showing this collaboration. We're pretty much in the middle of that pipeline. We're in the cloud part of it. So the cameras that they build capture 24 views. They are genuinely light field cameras. So they capture basically a holographic volumetric light field. And then we deliver, we process that data, we turn it into a CG model, and then we deliver that to tools like Unity and After Effects and Nuke. And the last leg of this commercialization was finding a great camera partner. And Facebook picked Red as the vendor that's going to be building these cameras, and they're awesome. And this was from a week ago at Oculus Connect 5, where this is the updated roadmap. And with Red's cameras, probably they're going to be rentable. And the stack that we're providing, we want to make holographic capture really simple for productions and shoots. But what's interesting is that we're not capturing video, we're capturing CG data. And we're, Facebook has a lot of tools in the stack that they've provided us that can segment pieces of the scene and characters. So you're starting to really build a way to tag assets. And even when you're dealing with tools like Nuke, which we built this integration for, you can mix CG assets with data coming from these cameras. So everything from the real world turns into a CG asset, and even whether you're in a video editing app or Unity or a high-end 3D tool, you're treating video as a CG object, and it can be relit, it can be mixed and matched together, and this is the future of production. It's certainly the way that we see it in Red and Facebook and even Google, which is working on very similar pipelines. This all sort of blends together nicely. And when you're actually publishing something with this Facebook camera and this pipeline, you're publishing potentially a Unity application with interactive content that can then be streamed to a phone or an HMD, or just enjoyed on a television set. But truly interaction, photorealism, and also simplicity of content creation is really important. And lastly, when we did the announcement with Facebook, we were showing another example where we can just take lights into that scene and relight it. So it's not just that we can let people move through a scene, it's that we can make these scenes themselves in real time while they're being experienced fit in with the real world or be relit or remixed together. And just given the proliferation of user-generated content and remixing, we think that's a fundamentally important part of the pipeline. And again, IP rights around how that works are tricky. It hasn't really been spelled out cleanly. The second leg of our technology stack is focused on rendering. Octane Render is the product, but there's a lot of pieces that go into that. One of those is we have a common interchange format that is based on open source formats like Alembic and EXR. And every single one of our tools, and we have 26 integrations that we provide in just a $20 a month subscription package, allow you to import and export Orbex scenes. And this includes all the lighting, the data. If you're capturing something with a Facebook camera or the Red camera, it'll turn it into an Orbex. So we have an interchange format, and we've actually been working with the MPEG working group on standardizing that or maybe doing it through SMPTE. But there is already a utility there that allows us to really build a content interchange format that is designed for holographic and six-stop rendering. Our integration with Unity is another really important point for that, because within Unity, we can now import all of these assets from cinematic tools. So for example, the opening Westworld that you saw can be imported into Unity, and it'll look perfect with our render inside of Unity. 6 million Unity users can now have this technology. It's super cool. And you can actually use it to do full cinematics from these tools, or you can create, again, volumetric content that's baked or for video games. Largely, as those things are converging, we see all these things kind of being one thing going forward. And in the case of some of our cinematic assets, we've seen a lot of interest with studios that want to basically publish a Unity experience or something that's volumetric, and they haven't been able to blend the cinematic pipeline or even the real world pipeline with something like Unity. And we're providing that that connection point, and that's why we've been ultra focused on this integration for about 2 years now. You can also just run games in Unity. Games can run with our cinematic render at full speed. So we've actually given game developers the ability to create games that look just like films and vice versa. We've also been working diligently on Unreal Engine, which is really only two players in the real-time game engine space. And so about a month ago, we announced that next year we'll be shipping this same technology with Unreal Engine. And there's a lot of great work that we've been doing over the years with Epic as well on Lightstage and creating sort of more advanced visual effects pipelines. And Unreal Engine itself, even without this technology, they did a shot for Rogue One. That was something that Kim LeBarry, who was the CTO of Epic and previously Lucasfilm, helped make happen. So the convergence of game engines and all these tools are really pretty awesome. But for us, what we want to deliver is not game engines that look close to movies, but actual almost boosting the quality of films even higher than what's been done in the past. So we've been leveraging not just GPUs, but also AI on GPUs. And this is an example of something that used to take minutes to render a final frame, only takes about a second. We can actually have the AI on the same NVIDIA GPU that we're showing here finish the render 1 second after it starts. So you have the ability to get the final frame on a single GPU in about a second. And so scaling that to full speed or 30 frames a second is something that can happen with advances in ray tracing hardware and other pieces. But we also have our render now running on mobile. So the GPUs on mobile phones are so good that they are actually superseding the integrated graphics on a MacBook. And our path tracer, the same one that we use for film rendering, is running interactively on an iPhone 8, which is pretty crazy. So those are the pieces that we're looking at as we project what's going to be possible. We don't think you'll even need a large desktop computer to run these kinds of render jobs. And of course, we also have the cloud, where we can remotely deliver even more graphics performance. On the publishing side of things, on streaming, the whole concept of how you deliver volumetric data and do it at a quality that is acceptable for VR or even AR is something that we've thought about a lot, and we worked on that diligently also with Facebook. So part of our work with them is not just to deliver the tools and the content creation part of it, but also the publishing piece. So this is from last year, where we're showing that when you create a piece of content for the Facebook video pipeline from these volumetric cameras, sure, we'll create an MP4 file, a video file, but there's also categories that go all the way to holographic streams, and those things are never really downloaded. Those are rendered on the cloud, and they're streamed as a portal. And holographic rendering and streaming is awesome, because what it does is, if you render an image or an object as a holographic media file, this is about 800K, it's the size of a JPEG or simple image, but you can look at it from any angle. It is just like a white light hologram. And if you render six of them and put them in a cube, you can actually move through space. And if you can also animate those things. So these things are basically just render jobs that pre-compute a cinematic environment and make it really, really, really inexpensive to navigate through. In fact, it takes about 1 millisecond to just render this view. And the data itself is actually not that big, but if you want to keep that all in the cloud, we can deliver that as a stream. And we can even mix that these different assets together very cheaply. For example, this is from the Facebook cinematic camera. And then this is an example showing AR on a phone with a live stream. It's about 1 megabit. and the light field rendering is on the cloud, but it's still, the latency is low enough that we can deliver that successfully. And that is probably the future of how the streaming will work. Now, there's nothing saying that we also can't download these holographic assets and mix those together, but having the ability to do an instant-on, unbuffered stream is really powerful. The way to generate these holograms, though, is actually fairly compute intensive. So, you know, rendering 2K or 4K obviously, you know, increases the number of pixels and raises your rendering. Going to VR typically goes to about 10 times that. So a lot of our renders that are taking up a lot of GPUs are actually not done locally, but are done on the cloud. So Warp was created, our cloud service was created to take data from any one of our 26 integrations and deliver that to Amazon or Google so that those GPUs can finish the render job. And just like the Ant-Man opening was done on the cloud, we see a lot of VR renders as well. And we imagine that as people create these holographic media files, we're going to need a lot more GPUs. So we launched this service back in 2015 with Oculus for VR rendering, and it's been live ever since. And the cost isn't huge, but it also is something where we've been afraid to sort of advertise it because there is a limited capacity of GPUs on the cloud. It's not like CPUs that have been, that are millions of machines. There is this barrier to doing that on the public cloud. But what's interesting is that there are millions of GPUs out there mining Ethereum on the blockchain. So there is, that's one of the reasons why we've been looking at GPU mining. And even the Ethereum blockchain is something that we can leverage for getting the kind of compute power that we need. We need about 100 times more compute power than what we currently get if we were to combine Azure, Google Compute, and Amazon. And we work with two of those partners really closely, and they're very aware of this project. So a year ago, we launched an Ethereum-backed token that essentially gives you or pays out the same cost as what the GPU power of our render does on Amazon or Google to end users that can fulfill render jobs. And there is hundreds of millions of GPUs out there. There's less than 50,000 available to us at the level that we need for rendering on the public cloud. So, and the other data point that I can sort of provide is that we have had one customer use 2,000 concurrent GPUs, and that's roughly about a third of Amazon's GPU capacity, as far as we can tell. And that's something that tells us that if we were to have, two customers like that a day or three, we'd be done. That's why, and that's only for normal VR rendering. So we do need more capacity. And the idea is that once we have a capacity with from GPU miners switching from mining Ethereum to render, we'll be able to deliver that service pretty seamlessly. So we've blocked this out into three phases. Phase three will be done by the end of the year, but it essentially replaces our centralized cloud service with a fully decentralized one. And the end user, the person creating those renders and paying for these renders initially in US dollars, now in render tokens, doesn't see any difference. The only difference is if it's done in an untrusted node, you have to have a watermark, and you basically only pay out the person rendering the job when the user says, okay, I like what I'm seeing, I'm gonna remove the watermark. We don't have to do that on Amazon or Google because we trust those providers. But similarly, there's no way to guarantee that the data going to an untrusted node is gonna be safe. But as we pointed out to our partners at Amazon and Google, there's also the risk that when you're sending a job even to the public cloud, even with the best of guidelines, somebody can be using exploit, for example, on a shared virtual machine to read memory out of what another instance is doing and grab that data. So for us, we want to harden the rendering data, even on the GPU, all the way down to the driver if we can. But there's definitely going to be two tiers. There's going to be tiers of render jobs that are not going to require this kind of studio-level certification. There are going to be plenty to do. And part of why we're part of Mesa now is that we want to figure out guidelines for larger companies that want to deliver really massive amounts of compute power. And they're not Amazon or Google. They may not know how to do that. And we've gotten a lot of requests. So we want to make sure that that's viable going forward. And the next year, the last phase of render is really all about using the blockchain itself, since we are tagging every single asset that we're rendering. We hash every single image, every texture, every model. We know who uploaded it first. We can create smart contracts around how those things can get reused. And that's really important even for Lightstage. So if you upload a Lightstage head and the actor, and we work very closely with WME, for example, it represents a huge number of sports athletes and actors. They can decide how their head gets used, how it gets rendered, there can be a verification step. All these things are possible, not just with the render network rendering these assets, but also on the publishing side. And that allows us to have a whole utility where we can have royalties for use or viewing basically done with render tokens. And render tokens are very simple. They're essentially a dollar of rendering on the public cloud, cumulatively is what a dollar of render is as a utility. And it, you know, there are a lot of tokens out there that I think have really poisoned the well for real projects like ours, but ours is a pure utility token, and it's something that has enormous use. So even with Facebook, even the processing of all those 24 views from the red camera, like 16 on the newer one, that also took down Amazon for F8 when we were doing tests on that, and that was and that's something that we are also going to leverage on the render network. We need, if we can get hundreds of thousands of GPUs or even millions, that's going to unlock the power of even the simpler stuff like we're doing with the Facebook cameras, but also truly what we need for holographic displays. Even if you imagine TVs and walls that are holographic, that's, you know, that's basically a wall-size display that's 4,000 DPI, and that is going to require a lot more compute power. So combining all our things together, I mean, the render network itself, more than just the blockchain piece, is a really cohesive ecosystem, and we've put a lot of thought into it. There's a lot of, you can see a lot of these pieces sort of, you know, converge in, you know, especially when you're looking at AR today. So for example, taking an object that's Disney asset and putting it on the light stage and then streaming it to a phone, there's a couple of steps to that. One is capturing it on the light stage, the second is turning it into a holographic asset. This is it in the Unity editor where it renders perfectly, and this is the same asset as a Unity project streaming on an AR phone. And we've been working on expanding this technology further and further, so you can take two holographic assets, even if they're rendered by different people in different ways, depending on the blockchain rights, and you can mix those together. And you don't need to have the source assets, you just need the holographic media file, which is, you know hides or obfuscates the source data used to generate it. But you can see we can, you know, have inner reflections and asset reuse. And importantly, if AR is going to work, and I think AR is actually one of the larger markets that we're looking at, because there's hundreds of millions of these iPhones out there, is actually much harder than VR. We need to be able to, in real time, capture the environment and, you know, drop in objects and make it look really good. So we've been working on that as well. And here's a test where we were able to, you know, this is our office in downtown LA, and this is running on the iPhone at 120 hertz. And this is from just scanning the environment with the iPhone camera and turning it into a 3D model that looks pretty good. With that in place, we can then deliver something like this, where we have a CG asset and the real-world environment, and they're completely blended together, and it looks absolutely perfect. And this is all running live. So this kind of technology is fantastic, not just for, you know, AR experiences on the iPhone, but also for people creating content. You can actually take, you know, do a movie shoot from an iPad with this technology and, you know, really almost do this in real time and have it be blended and perfectly composited in, you know, on the device itself, with minimal stream from a cloud service. We are also looking beyond this, and I think, frankly, the market for VR glasses and HMVs is still limited, but there are true holographic displays that are now in prototype form, and this is how we're testing them. We basically have a face tracking system that basically looks where our eyes are, and then basically projects a light field to one or both eyes. And if you have a stereo glasses, you can see it in both eyes. It looks absolutely awesome. But I've actually seen this very same effect on a true holographic display with no tracking, and all it needs to do is scale up. So it's just the compute, you know, intensity required to deliver, as I said, 4,000 DPI is pretty high, but we're not waiting for those to become mainstream. We're developing the tools and the content pipeline for that right now. And the work that's sort of being presented to standard bodies like MPEG, I think, is fundamental. Like, we don't want to see, you know, bifurcation of pipelines. We want to have a standard way of sharing assets and materials and the like. And since we've been working on this for so long, we've contributed all of that work to SMPTE and MPEG. Cable Labs has been helping us with that standard as well. And we think that's something that, the Cable Labs consortium, with the cable industry's backing, is really looking at the technology and services we're building and light field displays that are emerging now as the future of television and a justification for having high bandwidth. So I see the 2-minute warning. My last slide is just that we need a truly open metaverse. The metaverse is this fictional, abstract concept of having a spatial internet or a spatial, virtual world. But truly, it's not something that should be controlled by a single entity or locked down. It needs to be open, or else it'll never succeed to the level that I think users and consumers and even content creators will demand of it in the coming years and decades. So that's my presentation. I think we have maybe a little bit of time for questions. Thank you. Yes.